Good evening, everyone. This is John Adolfi. Today is January 19th, 2016. It's just a little after 7 p.m. And welcome to our seminar on creative financing. Tonight, we are going to talk about two types of owner financing. We're going to talk about the land contract, and we're going to talk about when an owner holds a mortgage, or owner hold, as some call it. All right, so let's get going. Here at the class, you've got your, I printed you out a little note section there, overview of the kind of a syllabus of tonight, so that something you can take home with and review later on. All right, let's get right into it. Land contract. Now, I'm going to be very, very frank about things, and I will tell you what I know. I can't tell you what I don't know. That I don't know that. But I will tell you about land contracts that the more I'm thinking about land contracts, as I'm getting ready to teach here, the more I'm not as excited about land contracts as I have been in the past. I've looked at land contracts and the lease option to buy, which I will just touch on briefly tonight, and the owner holding a mortgage as three equal ways of doing it, and I will continue to maintain that. Land contract may be something that you would want to enter into with somebody, but it doesn't look like, from what my observation is, as far as the people out there that are doing it. And Steve, you were talking about some sort of real estate resource center with seminars and stuff. Let me tell you something, Steve. You probably are better prepared, or shall I say, experienced or know how it works than probably 75% of those people on there, because you've actually gone through the process in your own territory twice now, getting ready to do it your third time. And there's nothing like actually experience. So you can talk about theory all you want in seminars and books and everything, but when the rubber meets the road, you actually have to apply these things in real-world situations where you have emotions, you have intentions, you have good intentions, evil intentions, you have, you know, all sorts of working parts, many working parts to a transaction. And people, we're not robots. Then you can see just exactly, do these things work or not? All right. About the land contract. Let's just talk about the nature of the land contract. And so my point of that is that although there are three different ways of doing this, the land contract is becoming a little bit less favorable in my mind. And let me tell you what the two are. The two are lease option number one, which again, we're not going to be talking about at great length tonight, and the owner hold. And there's some pitfalls to the owner hold, and we're going to talk about those tonight. There seems to be the least amount of pitfalls to the lease option agreement transaction that can take place when you're selling your home. And this, again, this seminar is for those who are looking to buy, whether you're going to live in it or buy it as an investment, or you're looking for an exit strategy for your own property. Okay? You don't have to necessarily sell your property for retail, have somebody go out and get a mortgage, and then close on it. You can do that. And the majority of the times, that's what people do. But I will say that there is a demand for the rent-to-own or creative financing. And I get phone calls probably 1 to 2 a week looking for rent-to-own. Rent-to-own. It's a big, huge need, rent-to-own, which in my mind, in our jargon, is lease option agreement. Or it could be a land contract. Okay, let's talk about the land contract. I've always described the land contract as a glorified rental agreement or glorified lease option. It seems like it's the next step up from a lease option. Now, a lease option, briefly, is when you enter into a lease to rent the place, to rent the house. And then you also agree to a final price for the house. Or if you don't, you at least have an option in place so that when you do negotiate the price, or in most cases you have already negotiated the price, there is some sort of monetary consideration so that nobody can just walk from the lease during the lease period without some sort of financial damage. Now, that amount, maybe let's just say $5,000. So here's how it works. I come in and I lease the house for $900 a month. None of that comes off the sticker price of the house. The $900 a month is just straight rent. Okay? Then, I want to buy it for $90,000. We agree on the price. We're also going to agree on a 2-year lease with an option to buy within that 2 years. I put $5,000 up And that $5,000 covers 2 years of the option. What that means is, if after the 2 years is up, and I as the buyer do not fulfill my side of the transaction and purchase your house for $90,000, I just go now on a month-to-month lease until I get evicted or he lets me stay there indefinitely. But I lose that $5,000 and the privilege to buy it for $90. And I continue to rent it for $900. Now, if we do go through with it, that $5,000 comes off the price of the house and I only have to pay $85,000. So the option agreement is part of the price of the house. But the rent is not. Now, if you want to be a good guy and take something off the rent, you can. $50, $100 each month off the price of the house. You can do that. You can also not charge the $5,000 up front. You can charge it on the rent. Fair market rent value is $900. I'm going to charge you $1,300 a month. $900 is rent. $400 is for the option. You go through with it, count up 24 times 4, that's $4,800. It comes off the property price, that additional amount that you're paying every month. It looks like rent, but it's actually an option. It's in addition to fair market value of the rent. You're adding it on top, but you're not. Sometimes people do both. They collect a portion up front, and they add on top of it. And that added on top of it comes off the price of the house, so does the option agreement. The initial upfront agreement comes off the price of the house. All right? That's a lease option. That's a rent to own. All right. It's very expensive. That's the problem. The advantage to the tenant? Here's, let me tell you what the advantage. That's a great question. The advantage to the tenant is they're starting to build towards something substantial. They're not just renting anymore. They've got some sense of ownership. And they want, some people want that. But the problem is, and listen, this is what I do with every person that calls me on the phone that says they're looking for a lease option. If I get into it with them a little bit and we spend some time on the phone, I end the conversation like this. Please, if you do get a rent to own out there apart from me, which most likely you will because I don't have a whole stable of those ready to, you know, show you those, would you call me and run it past me so at least you have a lifeline out there who will tell you honestly and objectively what it is and what you're getting yourself into. Now, I won't give them legal advice, but I will tell them some of the pluses and pitfalls, and I will explain it to them in a way that maybe they're not being explained by the seller. Because all too often what happens, and this is absolutely 1,000% true, what happens is that when you run into problems later on, that $5,000 that I just mentioned earlier in that example, they have no idea that that money is gone when they don't perform. They didn't get that. And all the money they spent in rent, they didn't get it, that's gone. Or that they didn't have more knocked off when they get to the end. Or whatever. There's a lot of questions they have in their minds. They're just all psyched about getting into the house. And that's another thing that I ask them. That's a good point, Steve. I tell them that's the most expensive way to buy a house. Is through a lease option agreement. But it's the easiest way. All you got to do is have a chunk of money.
Especially if you don't qualify for financing.
And if you don't qualify for financing, Swenda, thank you very much. If you don't qualify for financing, this is one of the reasons why people look for that. Sometimes it's a divorce and he needs one more year to get things together before he can buy the house and he or she or whatever. And they want their own home. They're used to having their own home. They don't want to rent. So there's a market for that, a huge market for that. And most of the investors out there are using it. Most of the investors are using that. They're not using anything else but that. Okay? Land contract. The deed, just like the lease option, the deed or the ownership, the title, does not pass to the buyer in a land contract. Just so there's no misunderstanding about it. Swenda, you as the owner, when I do a land, I'm the buyer, when I'm the land contract, we enter into this land contract deal, the deed, the title is still in your name as the seller. Does not pass. It only passes when I go and refinance it or come to the end of our contract, our land contract, and pay it all off. Or I get cash and I pay you off. Or I go get a mortgage and pay you off. Then the deed passes from you to me as a buyer, from seller to buyer. But it is the closest thing that you can get to where the deed actually does transfer in the sale. It doesn't transfer, but it's the kind of the closest feeling of ownership that you can get with a land contract. It almost feels like the owner is holding the mortgage. Almost. And we'll talk about that in just a second. And most people, I would say that they feel it is. You know, and I think there's probably some people that really are confused as to whose name the house is in. I think there's a small portion of people that are confused about that. I could be wrong, but I believe that is. Because it's, you know, it's technical stuff, it's legal stuff, and they probably didn't use an attorney. Now, even though the buyer does not have title to the property, in some cases, if they've got a good deal of their money paid into it, either initially or as time goes by, judges will see this if there's ever an issue. They will see that the buyer has equitable title, and that's just a big fancy word for saying they've got money title to it. Because they've got a lot of their money into it. So there's some consideration of ownership. Okay? So when you're ready to kick somebody out of a land contract, you can give them a 30-day notice. If they don't perform, you can give them a 30-day notice and kick them out just like a renter. But if they got some sort of equitable title to it, and they may not be smart enough or know enough to pursue it, but if you ever find yourself in front of a judge and you are the owner of the property, trying to kick out a tenant that has a land contract with you, if the judge is more Democrat than Republican, and I've been told that before, there may be a more consideration for the tenant's rights in respect to this idea of equitable title. Okay? It's not to say a Republican couldn't do it too, but this, just to be a little bit fun, tongue-in-cheek, but also I've been told that. The seller has the legal title at all times, like I said, until title passes. Okay, land contract uses. When the buyer has credit issues. That's typically when you're doing this kind of creative financing, when you have credit issues. But you as a landlord, or I'm sorry, as an owner, landlord, slip of the tongue, you're both, when you're considering a candidate for your house, okay, there's some things that you want to do. Pull a credit report, find out how much they make. You know, if they do have credit issues, you need to find out from them, is this going to be forever? Is this like I say, sometimes people get in a little pickle, but they're on their way out, fixing their credit. But a land contract is for the duration. That goes on for, you know, could go on for 5, 10, 15, 20, 30 years. Okay? When you do a land contract, it opens up your property to a larger market. And so does the lease option, too. You got more people to talk with. You're going to be talking, and if you're going to talk in lower end properties, you're going to be talking to a lot of people that just shouldn't be buying. So you're going to be talking to a lot of people, but it opens up to a larger market. Look, Steve, if you had put your property in the newspaper or whatever that said $2,000 down, owner will hold mortgage. How many phone calls do you think you would have gotten with the way your property looks? A lot.
Probably a lot. I'd say a lot.
You would.
Yeah.
With those kind of terms? Owner will hold with $2,000 down?
Yeah.
How about owner will hold with $500 down?
Yeah.
Everybody with or without a job would be calling you.
Yeah.
Now, one of the uses of a land contract is making more money on the front side. With the lease option and the land contract, you can ask for a little more for your property. Whereas when you're asking 100 for a house, you could ask for 110, 115,000. I've heard from one realtor down in West Palm Beach, he would say with creative financing, you add a 10% premium to it. So if the market value is X, you can add a little bit more to it. You just can. Because you're going to be selling it with you taking some risks. So you can get it, and they are in more of a position not to be able to bargain. You're basically, these are the rules. This is what I'm selling it for. It's how much down. You don't like it? I'm sorry, we cannot do business. It really basically boils down to it. Some people are very desperate to buy. Their circumstances can vary, but there can be a high emotion. Beware of the people that need to move by Friday. Serious. Beware. I get them. But I got to be out by... And I'm like... So when you want to maximize the total net after the sale, I'm talking everything, because you're going to get interest. We'll go over that in just a second. You're going to get a higher sales price. You're going to get interest, and that is going to maximize your, like for instance, Steve, if you did hold the mortgage with $2,000 down, let's say you sold the house for $100,000, okay? And we're going to see this in an example in just a second. Just think about, you didn't sell it for $100, you sold it for $110. You just made $10,000 extra. And then the interest, compound interest, it's an incredible thing. You add that over the course of 5 years, you've increased your return by that much more, okay? So here we've got an example of a market value of $90,000. So you're going to, with creative financing, add 10%, or let's just say approximately $100,000. Okay. Let's say you charge 6% interest, and you're only going to have this for this land contract for 3 years, and then you want them to, you're going to call the mortgage, you're going to put an end, you're going to balloon it, as they call it. Okay, so you're only going to do it for 3 years. All right, and then whatever the balance is, you're going to want that, in the form, you need to go out and get a mortgage. Okay? Let's say that's how you write it up. So your principal and interest payment is going to be $600 a month. Now that's a heck of a lot less money than the $1,200 you would get from renting it, wouldn't it? Isn't it though? That's something to consider right there too. There's nothing wrong with that, but that's a principal and interest payment of $600 instead of the $1,000 to $1,200 that you would get from renting it. Of which, of that $600 principal interest payment, $100 to $120 is principal. That means you are getting somewhere around $480 to $500 every month interest payments. Interest. So over the course of 3 years, okay, you have a $90,000 home. You sell it for $100,000 because you're doing owner financing. You get $18,000 in interest over a three-year period. Can you make $18,000 in interest on the stock market? So what have you made? Balloon it 3 years. You got $96,400 you're going to get paid back. This is what you would have put it on the market for originally, 90 grand. You're going to get $96,400 back after 3 years. You're going to get $18,000 in interest. You're going to get You add it all up, you've made an additional $24,400 on top of your you would have sold it for 90. You're going to now get $114,400 back. But there are risks involved here, so don't think that this is easy money. Take a short breath. We're going to move on to the next thing, which is owner financing. Now, I've done owner financing a couple of times. I was a third mortgage. By the way, third mortgage, what does that mean? That means that if the first one fails, you don't get paid. If the first or second one fail, you don't get paid. Okay? So you don't get paid if you're third in line. You are last on the line. That's the worst place you want to be, is third in line. Second in line, some banks won't even, or investors won't do it. They got to be first in line, because if the property owner fails, they want the property back. Okay? If you're second in line, you don't get any money sometimes, and you don't get the property back. With owner financing, you become the owner of the property that's selling it. Okay? Swenda, you've got the property. You're going to sell it to me. All right, you're the owner, I'm the buyer. When we do owner financing, you're going to sell me the property and you're going to hand me the title or the deed to the property. I am now the new owner. But what are you to me? You're the bank. You become the bank. Now, typically we bring a bank into the transaction. We have a buyer, a seller, and the bank. In this case, with owner financing or owner holding the mortgage, we have a buyer, we have a seller bank. That's what we have, someone who's a seller and the bank at the same time. Now, the really good thing about owner financing is the responsibility of the taxes and insurance, unlike the land contract, although you can write them up in such a way that can take the responsibility of the taxes and insurance passes to the new owner. Even in the land contract, it's still in the owner's name, the seller's name. So ultimately, responsibility is the owner, the seller, the guy who's holding the land contract for the buyer. It's in his name, the taxes are in his name, insurance are in his name. So But when title passes, responsibility of the taxes and insurance passes to the new owner. You as the bank and former owner's responsibility is to see every 6 months that the taxes are being paid. And if the insurance lapses, the insurance company will inform you immediately that the insurance just lapsed or is about to lapse on this property. And then you've got to have a conversation with the new homeowner that you're holding the mortgage for. If you don't pay it, Mr. and Mrs. Jones, I will pay it, and then I will charge you $300 more for it, for that service, and I will put that on the back end of your mortgage. And that's what they do. That's what banks do. They don't mess around. Remember to record both the deed and the mortgage at the closing. Never not record the deed, the mortgage. Record them both, okay? That way you have a record, and if anything happens, you have that instrument on file legally. The negatives to owner holding a mortgage: what if you get somebody who stops paying on the mortgage? What if you get somebody that stops paying on the mortgage? Then you got a problem. Now, in New York State, my understanding is they can start foreclosure even after the first month. But they usually wait to month number 3. Okay? You can start it after the 31st day to start foreclosure, but usually the banks wait till month 3. Okay? You'll need to look. There's an easy way and a hard way to repossess a property, whether it be a rental, or a lease option, or a land contract, or even when the mortgage or title is passed to the owner. And that is, have a sit down or a conversation over the phone and say, "Look, I know you're in trouble. I know there's a problem." If they're reasonable, just sit there and say, "Look, why don't we just..." I'll give you $500, have a broom clean in a week, and give me the keys. And let's just call it a deal. You've made a lot of money on the interest.
Right.
Okay? So $500 back to them as a kind of a moving bonus or whatever. Get out bonus, sign the title, give me the keys, we're done. Yeah. There's two things that make it ugly, expensive, I should say, and that is the time that the property sits vacant or somebody in it and non-paying. There's taxes and insurance that are accumulating. Granted, if you have the mortgage, your money just isn't coming in anymore for that. But there's taxes and insurance that are, you know... And then, you know, have they trashed the place, you know? Tom's over there going, yep.
I bought a lot of them that they've trashed.
Yeah. Oh, yes, you have.
Mm-hmm.
I've been witness to those.
Right.
Tom's just saying that he's bought a number of them that have been trashed. I was the culprit in selling him, not my own stuff, but other people's stuff where Tom has purchased and had to piece them back together. I did extensive amount of work. But now they're cash flowing, right? Yeah. Damage to the property could occur. You know, thousands of dollars. Could be the wear and tear because they just live like a tornado, you know, like the Tasmanian devil just all the time. And that's the wear and tear, kids, pets, and everything. Or they could just do damage on their way out if they're angry. I've seen HUD homes where people have taken their appliances out. I've seen them take light fixtures out. I've seen them take entire kitchens out. I've seen them take, before it became fashionable to take the copper out, I've seen them take copper out themselves. That didn't happen very often, but once in a while you'd see them. Copper wasn't very expensive, so it may have been a lot of spite more than anything else. Only saw that a couple of times. Oh yeah, they take a lot of things with them. New carpet, they'll take that with them. I'll give you an example of owner hold. And it's worked out great for me because I got a great gal that bought it from me. I had a townhouse. I didn't pay $51 for it. I paid less for it because it was my dad's estate. It was his townhouse. But we realized that the value of it was $51,000. We had to split it up three ways, so I actually got it for $34,000. But the estate valued at $51,000, and I just took my portion off, paid the estate $34,000, and acquired it. Okay? But ultimately it was $51,000 that was paid for because I didn't get any cash. I, I got in the equity of this. And it was worth 51. Okay? And the buyer paid $14,000 down. Okay? And, whoops, they paid $66,000 for it. As is, it was in pretty decent shape. And I didn't touch it. And she came in there and she paid $66,000 with $14,000 down. And there we go. And the mortgage is $52,000. 52 plus 14 equals $66,000. Okay? And 8% interest. And she pays $381 a month. And I checked the balance the other day and it was like some still ridiculous high amount, you know. I mean, it's a lot of that. It's like 300 of that is like interest every month. That's, what is that? $3,600, something like that. $3,600 in interest every month with hardly the principal being touched. Yeah, it's good. It's really good. Record your land contracts. This is a bonus tip. Record your land contracts with the county clerk's office. You can get STAR benefits. If you're the buyer, I'm saying. If you're the buyer. If you're the buyer, record your land contract with the county clerk's office. You can get STAR benefits. STAR benefits is a 30% off of your school tax, and that equates in this area anywhere between $500 to $700 off every year for owner-occupant properties. From your school tax, so you can get a reduction.
So who gets that today? I own property.
Yeah.
Right? And I do a land contract with somebody. He puts it in for a STAR program, but I'm still paying the tax.
I don't know how that works.
Okay, do you see how...
Yeah, I know what you're saying. Tom's bringing up a good point. If Tom's still paying the taxes, how can we get the STAR program if it's a land contract and he's going there to register the land contract at the clerk's office? I haven't gone through this, Tom. I was just told this from someone else who knows a little bit more than I do. I don't want to try one. Oh, you want to try one?
I'll go over that when we get done.
Okay.
What I want to do.
Okay, sounds good. No, sounds good. But just to recommend it out there, anybody who does this, to go ahead and try to do that. And call me and give me some feedback. All right. I was also told by a gentleman who specializes in this, so again, keep the land contract down, land contract down payments below 20% due to the equitable rights if you have to evict, which means that if you have a $50,000 house and you want to charge them something up front, 50,000 times 20 is 10 grand, maybe you want to charge them $8,000 to get into it. If you charge them more than 20%, if there's a problem, especially right off the bat, and that's when usually your problems can occur, most of the times it's right off the bat, you know, but if they occur later on down the line, you might be able to work it out. If not, fine, but if you ask for less up front and you do run into problems in the very beginning because you don't know each other, then you can ask them to leave and the judge won't say they have equitable rights and then you can get them out with just a regular eviction. Okay? Another bonus is owner financing is best done with 30% down. It's best done with 30% down. A lot of people don't. That would mean, Steve, you're, you know, $100,000 house, they would have to come up with $30,000. That's a lot of money to come up, and most people can't do it. Here, let me tell you the magic rule of banks. Do you notice in Oswego County? Oswego County has an average means income of $38,000 a year here. Onondaga County, it's $44,000. We're a little bit more affluent in Onondaga than we are here in Oswego. Okay? Have you ever looked around Oswego? Those of you maybe not from here or don't, but do you know what they're building in Oswego and Fulton? Fulton is not that economically great. No, you know, as far as commercial buildings, you wouldn't think that. What are you talking about, commercial buildings? Not building any commercial buildings in either one of those places. They are. I've seen four just in the last 2 years go up. Banks. And there's a reason for that. Nice, beautiful banks. And there's a reason for it is because banks know how to handle their money. Typically. Unless they're doing something naughty. And they still know what they're doing. Because they know that they can get bailed out because there's no way that the government's going to allow them to take those kind of chances, fail, and then collapse. It just won't happen. So they know that they'll get bailed out. Banks get bailed out all the time with mortgage insurance. Let me tell you a story about the Depression. During the Depression, and before the Depression, when you bought a house, you would have to come up with 35% of your own money. If you go down to Costa Rica right now, if you go down to Costa Rica and want to get a loan, you got to come up with 35% of your own money. And then they'll give you a mortgage for the 65%. I was reading a book, and I would recommend you get this book. It's called The Banker's Code. It's one of those few... Get the book, Swenda. Treat yourself to an Amazon purchase tonight.
All right.
Get yourself... Don't worry about the author. There's only one book by that title. If nothing more, it'll open up your eyes to how banks do it and inspire you in the arena of holding mortgages or lending money. There's a ton of money to be made in lending money or holding mortgages. You just got to know how to do it. So the banks, back before FDR, you had to have 35% down in order to buy a house and then get a mortgage. Why? The banks knew that 65% of their skin in the game was appropriate. 35% of the buyer's skin in the game was appropriate for a possible failure. When they fail with 35% of their own money into it, they can recoup their losses easily. There were no government-backed loans back then. So then after World War II, they said, man, a chicken in every pot. We need to get everybody in their own home. How do we make homing more affordable? So they said, we'll insure the loan so that the banks can give loans with 0% down, 3.5% down, 5% down instead of 35% down. And then if they fail, the banks will get every penny that's owed them. Back taxes, water bill, legal fees, back interest, principal, full, everything completely paid off. And then we'll take the house back. And that's what you call HUD homes. HUD homes are governmentally backed FHA mortgages. Pretty interesting. The banks are smart. If there was no government-backed loan, they would still be doing 35%. Now, granted, with 20% down, you can do a non-owner-occupant home. And also with the conventional mortgages, if you qualify with 20% down, they remove the mortgage insurance. I don't know why they've done that exactly. I don't know why they're not asking for more equity. But they've done that for a reason. It's extremely calculated. And so rest assured, there was a lot of thought that went into that percentage. So it's still government-backed. It's just that they don't charge you, the owner, the premium mortgage insurance that you do if you come in with 5% down, 3.5% down FHA. You have to pay anywhere between 0.5%, 0.75%, or 1% per year on the property. So if it's $100,000, it's $1,000. It's about $80 a month. Mortgage insurance. Unless you have to move the property faster, and do a great deal of screening, then you can ask for a little less money down. Some people ask for very little down. They do it all the time. All right. I'm going to, you know what? Those of you listening, I'm going to end it so this is not a super long presentation. And also, we're going to be doing some bonus teaching. So that means next month, if you want to hear the bonus teaching, you're going to have to come to the class and actually hear it. So I'm going to sign off for right now. You guys are awesome and have a wonderful day.